This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. Discover the future of trading with IBKR Desktop, Interactive Brokers' next-generation trading platform. Built from the ground up, IBKR Desktop combines their powerful features with a unique set of groundbreaking trading tools in a streamlined, intuitive interface. With access to over 150 markets, IBKR Desktop puts global stocks and options, futures, currencies, bonds, and funds at your fingertips. IBKR Desktop includes innovative features like multi-sort, which lets you sort data using multiple factors simultaneously, helping you quickly identify trading opportunities. And the options lattice, which visually highlights key metrics for smarter decisions. And whether you're a seasoned trader, a pro, or just starting out, IBKR Desktop redefines what traders can expect from a trading platform. Experience the future of trading today. Download IBKR Desktop at ibkr.com/desktop. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Inflation market doesn't really care. In fact, new all-time highs hit this week. Bitcoin and gold are blasting off, and meme stocks are flying and they're dying. Our guest today is Thomas Thornton from Hedge Fund Telemetry. All this and much more on episode number 869 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All-time highs, would you look at that? I hope you're playing along. Well, we are. Welcome to another awesome episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I'm glad you're joining me. Are you the first timer? Are you new? Are you just coming along to see what's going on? Well, I'm happy to have you. All you need to know about what we do when we're not podcasting is to go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. In fact, on that site is all the show notes from all the podcasts going back many, many years, and the information that we discuss and the contacts and everything you need to know from that. But you can find that all over there. And I got, you know, I said when we started, I hope you're playing along. You know what I mean by that, right? That hopefully you have taken the time to do the due diligence, all the work that you could do to make sure you you're invested properly according to your goals, your risk tolerance, your future outlook, et cetera. And if you're not playing along, maybe you've been reluctant for all the reasons that you're telling yourself. We all know, we know that, right? All the things, you know, market's too high, it's rigged, there's wars, there's going to be a recession, there's going to be a depression, there's going to be bank failures, all the things that you're thinking, AI isn't real, all the things that we talk to ourselves about on a regular basis get in the way of your financial success. Well, the good news is you're here. So take a deep breath and just exhale for a moment, and let's settle into the reality of what happens, not just today and tomorrow and next week, but 10, 20, 30 years from now, and why we are doing what we're doing, you and I, in terms of investing with our 401k plans, with our IRAs, with our individual and joint accounts, all the things that we have. If you've been so reluctant to get invested for I don't know how long it's been, and you're kicking yourself, and you always think that, you know what, the market's going to come down. And once it does, in fact, come down, you say, I knew it. And then you don't do anything about it because you figure, you know what, it's going to come down even more. You'll get into it when it really crashes this time. But then you never do because you think it's going to keep coming down, and you miss your opportunity time after time. If that's you, listen, there's some cures. We have some ways, in fact, to get you back in. And all you have to do is ask. We've talked about this and started really this, I would say, this solution process back years ago, but really brought it out during COVID and during the market meltdown when everybody was just freaking out and wanted out. And I said, look, here's the deal. You want out? I have no problem. You're not comfortable? That's fine. We all have to be able to sleep at night and we all have to be able to do what we got to do. But we got to find a way that when is it time to get back in? Is it going to be time when things go down dramatically from here? Or is it going to be time when, you know what, we're proven wrong and it goes up and it continues up? Like we've been seeing, for example, and all the reasons you have now, and you can't get yourself back in. Well, we've created this. All you have to do is go over to and find out more over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and ask Andrew. You can listen to back episodes that we talked about back from 2020 and 21. But any of the contact buttons, just, you know, get in touch with us. We'll figure out how to get yourself straight. Moving along. Yeah, you're asking. Andrew, you're asking your friends, your relatives, your kids, your parents, what is with these meme stocks? What happened this week with the names? You know the names, right? We have GameStop and AMC, and we have Koss and Build-A-Bear. What a wild ride this past week on nothing more than the original Roaring Kitty coming back, Keith Gill, posting a tweet with nothing there really, but everything was really exciting. Everything went up 20, 30, 40, 50, 100%. And then you know what happened starting Wednesday. It all started caving back in, and a lot of the money was given back. Everybody had opportunities thinking, you know what, GameStop is going to be the new Microsoft. No, it's not. Come on. I mean, the next Take-Two Interactive is going to... No, sorry. AMC, yeah, everybody's going to go back to the movie. No, they're not going to do that either. I know. There's going to be a real sweeping euphoria about people going to the malls and doing Build-A-Bears. And I don't think so. So all of this was really nothing more than a real great, some kind of short squeeze or even just a crazy bull market run for the moment. Who knows where we're going, but let's not get carried away. This is some opportunity. The reality is that the VIX did drop in the 12s, which is really interesting. Some are calling this moment a cautious moment. It's something you need to be wary of, this complacency in the markets. And I would agree there is some degree of complacency in the markets right now. Everybody is, you know, thinking about the Fed safety net. And we're going to talk about that more so with our next guest, because he has, I know we've talked about the VIX before, but besides that, what else is going on? This week, we saw PPI, CPI come out. We saw the initial claims come out that were a little bit more than expected, but that was really insignificant. The PPI that came out that was hot, it was 0.5. Everybody was initially for about 30, 40 seconds, really freaked out about it. Markets and the futures came down dramatically, then cleared up and cleaned up. And it was like, wait a minute, what do they know that we don't know? Bottom line of what happened here was there was an update, a revision, downward revision, the prior month. And that was enough to say that this month's hotter number wasn't so bad. In other words, the comparison that we had this month was originally supposed to be against a higher number. So when the revision hit, the hot number was less hot. It was against the lower number. So, of course, you have to adjust your numbers. So that's where the markets were telling themselves anyway that, you know, this revision made this month not look so bad. So initially, the headline number that came out was very concerning, 0.5. But when the adjustment came out, maybe it was more like a 0.4. And that wasn't as bad. And then we had the CPI this week. Now, remember, let me just stop for a second. All along, we've had Powell and his minions talking about how, you know, we're not there yet on inflation where we want to be. There's some concerns in the market, but yet at the same time, we're not going to hike. And sending a message to the markets that the Fed put or the Fed safety net is kind of weirdly there. Maybe not as much as concern over the Fed and the plunge protection team that we talked about on DH Unplugged this week on Tuesday. Maybe not that being as much of an issue. But that eventually, sometime, maybe in the future, one day, hopefully, someday, the Fed is going to drop rates. And I would agree with that. Someday they will. I don't know if there's a rate hike in between, further pauses, but one day they will. The markets have that on their mind. Now, when CPI came out this week, the first time it wasn't overtly hot. It wasn't crazy like, oh my God. It was just in line. And even though the actual inflation index hit an all-time high, the actual, if you keep counting, how much are the price of goods over time, hit an all-time high, the idea that inflation itself wasn't that hot, well, that pretty much gave markets the green light. And that, when you couple that with the Powell talk about not raising, excitement hit. We were close enough to all-time highs for markets to say, let's just go and do it. And we saw a technical breakout over all-time highs. And that was enough to get the shorts covering. So here we are. Excitement over inflation, the Fed priming the markets continuing, and all eyes are on, okay, where's the next place? Where are we going? All's good. Like I said in the beginning, I hope you're participating. I hope you're involved some way. That doesn't have to be all in or all out, but maybe somewhere in the middle. So, lots to talk about with what's going on now. Valuations, AI, VIX, bonds, commodities, all this we'll talk about with our guests. Before we get to him, I want to talk about Interactive Brokers just one more time here because it's something important I want to tell you. You probably know this, but Interactive Brokers is the professional's gateway to the world's markets. Interactive Brokers offers commissions starting at USD zero on U.S. listed stocks and ETFs with low commissions on other products. And there's no added spreads or ticket charges or account minimums. Clients in over 200 countries and territories can trade stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, funds, and more on over 150 global markets from a single unified platform. And better yet, clients earn interest rates of up to 4.83% on instantly available cash and pay margin rates up to 49% lower than the industry. And it's great to know that clients can earn extra income on lendable shares, and IBKR's powerful award-winning trading platform helps every level of investor succeed, from beginner to advanced on mobile, web, and desktop. Learn more at IBKR.com. And with that in mind, let's get to our guest today. It's Thomas Thornton. He's a former portfolio manager, senior trader, technical analyst with Level in Global Investors, Galileo Capital. He's written a daily market note for a select group of hedge fund managers for years. And now he's offered it to all investors, called Hedge Fund Telemetry. You know him, he's been on before. Good friend. His long-term focus on sentiment indicators, as he says, borders on the obsessive. So pretty cool. He's also an F1 enthusiast. So I'm going to start that with that, Tom. Were you down here for F1 Miami? You better say no.
I was not.
Okay, because if you said yes.
I would have liked to. It was a very good race, which I think might have been one of the best races in several years, with Lando Norris winning. And I was thrilled about that. I'm sort of in the anyone but Max Verstappen of this year to make it exciting.
That's funny. Let's talk about some things that are going on around the world. I'm not sure where to start, but we might as well just start with this because it's just, you know, it ruffles my feathers and get this out of the way. But let's talk about the Fed and what's going on with the markets and with the ideas that we've had. Let me set the stage for you. We've had many inflationary numbers that have come in hot. And the idea is, you know, one number is like, okay, you know, whatever. Two times, like, that's starting to be concerning. Three times becomes more like a trend. And then everybody seemed to be upset about it. But yet, markets pretty much discounted all of this with the hope that sometime, someday, the Fed's going to come in and cut. Now, let me just further this for one moment and then let you loose on it. There was the idea that we'd have 7 rate cuts, then 5 rate cuts, then 3, then none, maybe a hike. Now it looks like the Fed is just covering their tracks pretty well, trying their best to make sure nobody at all thinks there'll be ever a rate hike in the future in this cycle. And that's been the going play from all the different minions and speakers of Powell. And here we are with one number that came out last week with CPI that was, I would say, a little bit less concerning, but still, you know, still inflationary, way off the mark. Where are we? What does the market have right, wrong? What's the story?
Well, I think that the Fed, well, I think the reliance on the Fed cutting rates is too high, mm-hmm. and it has been too high. And the problem is, we all know the Fed wants to cut rates. They're dying to cut rates. Jerome Powell has, in December, said, I want to cut rates, and he didn't say it like that, but he made it very clear that it was mission accomplished. Inflation is moving to our target, and it's on the horizon that we're going to cut rates. And okay, I get that, but I think that was premature, and I'm sort of like Stan Druckenmiller, who recently said that was a grave mistake to do that, because it sent stocks and bonds the higher, and not rates, but bond prices went higher. Crypto went nuts on the upside. Risk assets went crazy, and that actually created looser financial conditions, which sort of negates the move for or what the Fed's trying to do to lower inflation. And I think that, look, I get why they want to cut rates, and I think it's important that they eventually do cut rates. You hope that that they will, do it judiciously, but they don't have the data that justifies it. And that's the problem that I see. And the market, when I say that they're just looking for anything that will give them hope that they'll cut rates, is they have ignored the super hot PPI data that came in because the previous month's data was revised lower, a lot lower. And that I am a little questioning because the CPI data didn't get lowered, dramatically lower from the previous month. But yeah, regardless, the CPI data came in one tick below consensus on, I think it was the month over month.
Yep.
And that's like the greatest thing in the world. Yeah. So let's jam stocks higher,
All-time highs. All-time highs.
And you know, one thing to also think about is, a couple things on the Fed. One, I don't know how much a 25 basis point rate cut's going to do to really change things. And considering the U.S. government has had a fiscal policy of maximum looseness in their spending, I mean, they're spending like crazy. And borrowing.
Wait. The Inflation Reduction Act was spending to reduce inflation, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it worked. It worked. It was a great idea. And they named things. You know, the Obamacare was it was supposed to reduce prices for healthcare, Affordable Healthcare Act. I don't know anybody that's had affordable healthcare since. I'm not trying to be political here, because I'll just let you know, I don't like either party of what's going on right now. I think they spent the same amount of money and say the same things and are so polarized that I'm just sick of it all. And I wish there was someone that had a plan, someone rational, perhaps younger, but let's not go there. But going back to the Fed, look, they're going to come up on some base effects in June. The June inflation number last year was at 3%. That was the low. That was the lowest reading in inflation in the last 18 months. And that could start to see inflation, if anything, stay sticky, maybe tick up a little bit more. And again, I think the market is just dying for anything. They look for the silver lining in every single thing. And with the fiscal policy so out of control, with running it, massive deficits. It's an election year. Come on, we got a Lamborghini in everyone's driveway type mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be understandable, but that's probably going to put pressure on the long end of the curve, on the yield curve, and rates could possibly move higher in that regard. And that would be not a good thing.
It seems like there's a ceiling on rates, and the 10-year at, like, you know, 5, but let's call 4.7548. That seems to be the current resistance level. We got right up to that, snuck right up to it, and then we saw the PPI number, which people really didn't care about, like you said, because the revision. And there, I talked about that at the top of the show. That makes some sense when you do see revisions and you're comparing month over month. You have to take that into consideration. I get that. But the fact is still, you know, and with all the rhetoric that goes on from the Fed, it's not surprising that markets are so spun up about all of this. But it is pretty amazing that we're hitting all-time highs in a time with all the other things surrounding this in addition to this going on, don't you think?
Well, we can go back to the old, you know, narrative of the narrow stock attribution, and you're not necessarily seeing a massive increase in new highs with the market hitting new highs. It doesn't take a lot, and you can have NVIDIA, which has done 35% of the entire gain in the NASDAQ and S&P, and I sort of roughly say that. That was probably the last time I've looked. Last time I looked also is we don't really have that many. We have more stocks down this quarter from April than up, as you know, and that's a little concerning. I think that there's still a lot of risk out there. And look, there's opportunities to find ideas. And certainly I don't want to say, oh, like I'm always bearish because I try to find things that are undervalued, and several episodes ago, I was telling you how I loved energy. And I can tell you that was towards the end of last year. And I started buying, I overweighted my portfolio with 20% in energy stocks and ETFs. And then I trimmed those and got rid of them for the most part. Actually, everything fairly close to the highs. And now I'm starting to dip a little bit back more into energy, and I'm a little skeptical about it. But my indicators told me that that was the right thing to do. The last time we talked, I think I spoke about I liked Chinese internet stocks. Mm-hmm. I like Alibaba. I like Baidu. I like KWeb. These are fairly easy to understand stocks, and they've been so out of favor. People hated these, absolutely hated them. And I get it. I was negative on them for quite a while, and outflows of Chinese stocks. They're going to invade Taiwan and it's going to be World War III. You don't want to be there. They're going to ban the ADRs, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't care. They traded at like 8 to 10 times earnings, and they're, you know, the management of Alibaba brought back some of the founders, not Jack Ma, but Jack Ma bought $250 million worth of stock. That matters. Mm-hmm. I think that's a sign that he believes the stock's undervalued.
Yep.
And they're turning it around. The stock's up today as we speak, really nice, making a 2024 high. Very pleased with that.
So it's interesting.
And bouncing back after earnings.
You talk about
a little squishy.
You talk about confidence and talk about what happened with China. I mean, we moved into China stocks in the beginning of this year. And the reason was that you looked at the charts, you looked at the Hong Kong markets down levels like not seen in 20 years, right? Then you see that the confidence and sentiment around China is like, nope, that's it. It's done. It will never come back. It's a dead deal. And then you saw what happened with the real estate and the banking. And then the realization hit me that, you know what, this is really bad. And is it a blood in the streets time? I think so, number one. Number two, do we know that the Chinese government has a lot to benefit if they can prop this thing back up? And we took a nice piece of China markets in terms of an index with a symbol MCHI, which is like, you know, very similar to FXI, which is the Hong Kong markets, but a little broader. And it's up, you know, substantially since then. So good call on your part, by the way, on the China. And I think that is a lesson to people that you don't always have to be afraid and panicked about something necessarily just because it's down. If there is opportunity, it could round out and come back up in your favor. And it's just looking at something like, you know, it's on sale, and it's potentially a very beneficial opportunity for you, right?
I 100% agree. And I'm the type of investor that looks for places to plant some seeds and then see the green shoots sprout. And then when they become trees, you typically see them talked about how wonderful they are on CNBC. So I'm, you know, early on with a lot of different themes. And when I do find a theme that I really like, it's quite obvious I'll put 20% diversified in those into my portfolio. And I'm patient. I do a lot of work fundamentally, technically, checks everywhere. But I think that they still have room to go. And I'd be thrilled to see a little bit of dip in these and buy more. I mean, they are AI companies as well. Mm-hmm. They have huge AI investments. And one of the big things that's happening that's different today versus, let's say, a year ago, the Chinese government was crapping all over these tech companies because the leaders became too powerful and they watched all their stocks go down. And it was a come to Jesus moment for mm-hmm. these tech leaders. And now the government's a little bit cooler and saying, hey, we want to make sure that we are in on the AI boom. And you see this chip war that's happening. And so I think that these companies are starting to turn. I also think the Chinese economy has plenty of issues with debt, of course, but they've also gone through a deflationary period. Deflation, for those that don't know, is when prices go down, and not inflation, when they go up a little bit or less than, you know, the previous month, as we've seen. I mean, that's one thing about the inflation thing with that's happening in the U.S. I'll just go segue back to that. Prices are still going up. They're going up 3% plus a year. And going back to 2020, a lot of prices are up 20 to 30% from those levels. Mm-hmm. And the consumer is well aware of that. If you take your family out to dinner, you get the check and you want to regurgitate when you see the check, go to the supermarket, terrible. Yeah. It's just things cost more money than they did several years ago.
Actually, Thomas, do you know that the CPI index, the actual raw number index, the prices historically, and is at an all time high now, which makes sense.
Yeah. It's still going up. You know, that's the thing. It's going up. It's going up less by a percentage of what it was going up, but that's not any place to, you know, say, oh, well, that's great. Let's cut rates or let's make a political statement that, you know, inflation is licked. That's not great. And it's difficult on the consumer, and it's difficult. And we've seen it across the board. We're starting to see delinquency rates go up in different places, from cars to even houses are starting to see it. Credit cards is notable. You know, Walmart today came out with their earnings, which were pretty good. And they said that they're seeing a higher end consumer starting to shop at Walmart. And that's, I think, due to inflation and people looking for better value out there. And Walmart offers that for people. So that's a good sign for Walmart. But I think it's also dangerous because the lower end consumer is facing even greater, more difficult circumstances trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, buying down, shopping down. I mean, Walmart did make some interesting commentary about that this is not inflationary. It's just higher ticket items, higher number of items that they're selling, which is kind of also concerning to me, because that means the consumer hasn't cooled. Or like you said, maybe they're bringing in a different consumer to add on to their consumer base they already have. Either way, the point is,
I think so.
When you look at companies like Abercrombie and Fitch, and you look at companies like Walmart, you look at companies like even some of the department stores, I mean, these stocks are off on a magical move on the upside when you know, and profitability is coming out, and just amazing amounts of opportunity for the retail segment. And even though a lot of people are crying about how the retail and this, you know, classification of people are really not doing well, they're hurting. I got to tell you, I don't think it's really, really, really so problematic right now that we're seeing broad-based drops in prices, as we aren't, because we still have inflation. And while some people are hurting, other people on the other side are spending like crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I live in an affluent community, and restaurants are full. And you go into New York City, and the restaurants are packed, and people are still traveling. I think it's moderating a bit. There are signs out there that it's moderating, and it, you know, you're not going to necessarily see everything, you know, fall apart when you have unemployment under 4%. You have the stock market at new highs, because there is a wealth effect type of feeling. Sure. Oh, my 401k is higher, my stock portfolio is higher. They don't really see it yet, but when it starts to happen, it usually happens pretty fast. But you know, I'm an analyst. I'm a trader. I look for things early on and start to try and participate and find those ideas. But I think that, look, I think the next 6 months we have a lot of stuff happening. We're going to have a you know, presidential election. I think people are going to get a little nervous about that. I don't think that the current candidates have much of a plan that other than let's kick the can or let's cut taxes. It doesn't necessarily make the long-term stability of our nation better. And I think that's going to weigh. I think next year is going to be a challenging year. I think the Fed's going to, they definitely will be cutting rates, but I'm not sure necessarily if it's going to help, because traditionally when they do start a cutting cycle.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I wanted to ask
you. Are hitting the fan.
Yep. The whole point of cutting rates,
it's bad.
The whole point of cutting rates, Thomas, is because things are not good. And
yeah,
the market setup right now is, hey, that good news is they're cutting rates. Well, it's like, what? Wait a minute. That means that the economy is slowing, earnings are slowing, people are out of jobs, all sorts of problems. We need stimulus in the economy because things aren't good. Go look at any other time they cut rates. When they start cutting rates is when the stock market takes a crap.
The problem that we have is that the short-term memory thinks that back in 2020, when we had this little pandemic and everybody was sitting inside their house, and the Fed cut rates and they stimulated with something like $4 trillion, that's a T, that is going to happen again. And I think that that's going to be poor thinking, because it's again, I don't think the economy's, you know, having that big of a problem right now, but I think that the risk is next year, and things are going to start to get real. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the pay the piper. And again, I don't think that either candidate has much of a plan other than kick the can down the road, or let's cut taxes, which with a big deficit,
makes no sense.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Let me ask you this question.
I don't know.
If the current management or the incoming management potentially of our government was the management of company and the books were of the U.S. now a company, would you buy that company?
Well, I'll say yes, because
really?
We're the best. Yeah, because we're the best country in the world. And
I'm talking about fundamentally,
we have massive amounts of flaws. I could say that there are a lot of other countries out there that have even greater risks.
Yeah.
But I do think that we have the ability to fix things. It just may be a bit of a difficult period that we may have to go through first. I'm not selling the United States short ever. I don't think that's...
I get that. No, I get that. I'm just saying that they don't, have a plan.
That's not my thing. But I think that the risk that we have is that we have poor management and things could get worse. Things could get worse. And I'm not necessarily... I'm not optimistic about if they do cut rates, it could be the time you want to sell and take some off. Again, I think I said this the last time. There are three ways the Fed typically cuts rates. And the first is if there's a market dislocation. And that's if the, let's just say the equity market went down, I'm going to say over 10%, let's say 20%. Then they start to get a little nervous. If there's a bond market has a crash and rates spike, I could see them taking matters into their own hands. And certainly if the bond market crashed, you'd have the stock market crashing as well. That's possible. Then it's if there's plumbing issues. And that means if there's a banking crisis and banks are under pressure with their balance sheets. And we kind of saw that with the mini bank crisis last year. And the Fed, you know, there were people saying the Fed's going to cut rates like in 2 months after that happened. And that sort of fell apart. And that jammed the market higher because of the hopes that Fed was going to cut rates. Mm-hmm. Nuts. And then the last one, which I certainly hope doesn't happen, is if there's some sort of terrorism or war or political assassination or something like that. And they would cut rates for, you know, to bring in stability in the short term, which I think would, I hope that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But those are the three ways I foresee the Fed cutting rates. I've been in the camp of higher for longer for a long time. I don't see the Fed hiking rates. That's not really something I've put into my thesis. If inflation goes nuts on the upside for whatever reason, maybe, but I just don't see that happening. I don't think the political capital is there that anybody has in the Fed or the Treasury or the government that would sort of allow that or be able to absorb that, especially in an election year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be something
you know? To see.
Hey, September, we're going to cut. We're going to raise rates.
We have an idea here. Good luck. Yeah, right before the elections, let's jam it real hard. Let's. I want to talk about the meme stocks that we saw last week. But I want to talk about before we do that. Let's talk about Nvidia. Nvidia is coming out next week on the 22nd, I believe. They're going to report earnings. A lot of question about whether or not the same type of growth will continue and whether it can continue and whether some of the potential theoretical competitors are actually there doing something, whether or not we continue to need all this buildup and for how long will it last. What are your thoughts on NVIDIA and what may be going on?
Well, first of all, I don't own NVIDIA. I wish I did. And when it crashed, I bought it at like 120 and I sold it higher. And I thought I was a genius, but I'm not. I didn't buy it. I think that it's a rare type of company that is in a sweet spot that's cornered the market for these AI chips and data center upgrades. And Jensen Wang Anyway, he is a great marketer. He's always captured the latest in waves, whether it's, you know, I guess, you know, COVID, he was, you know, with computers and there was gaming at one time. It was crypto mining at one point. So he's very good at that. And this has been an extraordinary move. The thing that concerns me, and a lot of people can, you know, say, oh, it's like Cisco. Well, it's very similar in a pattern like Cisco. Cisco's PE was a lot higher back then, but the difference now, and it may be a little bit more dangerous, is that NVIDIA's market cap is, I mean, we're talking $2 trillion and it's increased, I think, $1.5 trillion in the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fairly extraordinary. And if that starts to fail, that's a lot of market cap with a lot of people that are very long this particular stock. And I think that is something that worries me. Now, one thing that you have to kind of think about is that you know, a lot of portfolio managers, including me, have underperformed the S&P. And that's partly because it's been a very narrow market. And if you go and you look at what, okay, NVIDIA this year, I'm looking at the NDX right now, the NASDAQ 100, it is, it's attributed 32.6% of the entire index move. And the next best attribute is Meta at 12%. So it's almost three times the next largest attribute. Avago is 11%, Microsoft's 10%, Amazon is 10%, and then Google is around, you know, 10% as well. So these are it's really narrow of the ones that worked. And, you know, year to date, the NASDAQ has 60 stocks up and 44 down. I mean, there's a couple that have been additions and removals. But I think that that's important that you think that it's pretty narrow with one stock. So a lot really rides on it. And everybody wants, you know, hyper growth. And if hyper growth starts to become really good growth, the stock will probably go down. And I have no position in it. I shorted it after earnings, you know, went down 10%. I think it went down 20% off the highs recently, almost 20%. And then bounced. The thing that, again, I think it's a fairly crowded stock. People are in this. They feel very comfortable. The theme is great.
Did you say fairly crowded? Fairly crowded? I think obnoxiously crowded.
Yeah, it's okay. Obnoxiously crowded. But I think that they can justify it because the company's executing better than any other tech company in the world, by far. And they have, you know, they could have a Meta type moment where everybody's in this stock. They expect great numbers to continue and the stock gets, you know, hit 20%. And that's a lot of market cap. That could be $400 billion in market cap, which is almost the market cap of Cisco at its high back in 2000. So it would leave a mark, let's just say. But I don't know if it's this quarter, I don't know if it's next quarter, but eventually the data centers are going to get pretty much done. And it may not be, you know, just like Cisco, their growth didn't necessarily turn negative. They continued to grow, but just at a lower rate. And that's something that we're going to be watching for. So that's next week. I'm terrified of shorting this because I think that they could announce a split. And not that it necessarily matters from the fundamental point of view, but retail traders and shorts will cover, you know, they'll go nuts and jam it higher. And to think that if they went 4-for-1, each point would be a market cap move. If it goes down to, like, let's say it's $1,000 and it goes to, you know, 4-for-1, or it's $800, it goes to 200. Each point's a $10 billion market cap move. Which is absurd. And that is what their revenue was in, you know, just, I think, a year ago, this quarter, $10 billion. So it's, it could become something that, I mean, I'd like to stay away from some of the higher risk stuff. And you mentioned meme stocks.
Yeah.
I've tried to stay, I tell people, listen, every fundamental bone in my body would want to short these AMCs, the GMEs. I looked at it, you know, when they were, you know, going higher, and I watched them the last time they did it. But I don't want to show up in Dumb Money 2 as a character on there saying, oh, I was short AMC or GME and I got run over. Because really, there's no reason necessarily to be in these. You can avoid it and just watch it. Most people that that bought those stocks the last time lost money. I mean, a lot of them did. I mean,
so the same thing happened this time.
Yeah. I mean, they're right back down. I did participate in my own special way of creating a short. And since I look at indexes and weightings of indexes a little too much, I looked at the XRT, the S&P Retail Index ETF, and GME had become a 5% weight, which was almost three times the next sized weight. So I shorted XRT when GME was a lot higher, and it's come down. And a lot of the retail stocks that didn't really have earnings and were heavily shorted got jammed up as well. So it was a really nasty short squeeze across the board in the last couple of weeks. And a lot of consumer discretionary traders and portfolio managers really were hit rather severely with it all. And so I'd rather just watch it and from afar, and I'll try and short something with a little less risk.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so let's move into Tesla for a second here, because Tesla's been all over the place, a lot of lawsuits, a lot of problems, some things that are coming home to roost. But what's your thoughts about Tesla as a potential recovery play here, or is there just more things going to happen?
I've been short Tesla for a while. My average cost basis is around 240. I covered a little in our fund around 140 ahead of earnings. I should have covered it all. I added back the day after, and then it went a little higher. So I'm fine. I'm not necessarily underwater in this, but I look at it as it's getting desperate now, because all the fundamentals are starting to weaken. They've been weakening for the last year. Earnings per share, margins, revenues, cash flow is basically, we're going to have a negative cash flow for the next year. They don't have new products that they can sell, no new cars that they can sell. They've talked about this Model 2, it's a low-priced car, and that looks like it's done. It's not going to happen. And Elon Musk on the call said that they were going to come out with lower-priced cars, which I and a couple others, some analysts that I know, will equate that to cheapening out the current lineup. And that means perhaps smaller battery capacity. But they've lost in China. BYD is eating their lunch. Xiaomi has their new car. I mean, Tesla was selling, something close to 20,000 cars in China and a week, and now they're, under 10,000 a week. Their deliveries missed numbers for the first quarter, and even the most bearish of them all estimates they missed, and they're under 400,000 cars sold, 385, I think. That consensus was 500 at the beginning of the year for the beginning of the quarter. Consensus is still way too high. And the data that I track, and demand issues have always been the core short thesis for Tesla. And the data I track still shows it declining. Again, the street is way too high. And they produced or sold 1.8 million cars last year. That the street was at 2.2 at the beginning of the year, 2.2 million cars they would sell. It's now, I think, just under 2 million. And I think it's going to be under 1.8, perhaps something closer to 1.6 million cars. So this is a growth company with a $500+ billion market cap that is not growing and declining. And they have a very tired model lineup. A lot of new models are coming out in tons in China and lots in Japan, Korea, and Europe as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's a lot of problems there. the pivot to the robo-taxi is something that Elon tried and worked, and it worked back in 2019, where people were expecting to have 1 million robo-taxis on the road the next year. The full self-driving doesn't work anymore. It really, or that whole mantra doesn't work. I'd be thrilled if it did. That'd be great. But it's not level 3 or 4 or 5. I mean, it's level 2, which is sort of driver assist. So now they call it drivers, you know, full supervised driving.
Oh, change out to yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they change it. And that's basically what it is. The problem is that robo-taxis are still years away. And I have a friend that spoke with Adam Jonas of Morgan Stanley, and he has a much different tune that he tells on calls versus what he puts in his reports. And he has a $300 price target, but he thinks the stock could go lower. But here's the thing. If robo-taxis are going to happen, here's the one thing that you will know that it's actually working is when Tesla says we will indemnify our software, our hardware for robo-taxis, and we will take responsibility if there's accidents, you know, crashes, deaths, people getting hurt, whatever, they will take the insurance on that. And that's not happening anytime soon. So if anyone says, oh, well, they're getting better, well, until that happens, there's no robo-taxi.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Other robo-taxis that are working with this Waymo and even full self-driving capability with several of the major manufacturers like Mercedes, they have said that they would be liable if you're using our software or hardware and you had an accident. Liability has always been the key. And just think, Andrew, if you had a Tesla and you sent your car, you said, oh, I'm going to go make $100 today and I'm just going to let it go out on the app, and you allow people that you don't know get in your car, and let's say they're driving in it and it gets in an accident and it's on full self-driving. Are you going to really want to take liability for that?
Of course not.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Of course not.
The other thing is, I mean, personally, I just can't imagine myself with it, you know, having a nice car like a Tesla, saying, okay, I'm just going to let anyone out there get in my car and take it for a drive or be in the back. God knows what could happen. You can only imagine from the trash left in there or some of the illicit things that could happen. Ooh, I don't want to think about it. Yeah, it could be ugly.
But it won't be
individual. And so that's it.
Well, the theory was that you have these robo-taxis and that individuals were going to be the ones to create the fleet. That probably will be rolled over pretty fast, if and when. But I agree with you. This has some interesting implications for the insurance industry as well, which, by the way, should get some implications because the cost of car insurance is one of the major drivers inside of the inflation numbers, folks. If you haven't looked at your car insurance bill, and by God, don't down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you don't want to be. I've thought maybe I'll just give up my car. It's like stupid. How much money am I going to save?
One thing to think about with the whole self-driving and all this and Elon's pivot towards that. I think he just is trying to take this, you know, distract things from actually what's happening. And, you know, it's always the next thing that, you know, people are excited about with Elon Musk. And, you know, we're going to go to Mars, you know, by the middle of the 2020s. Well, we're not going there yet. It's a lot of hope. You know, we're going to have robots that we're going to sell next year. I don't think so. Semi-truck, nobody's really needing that. Stuff that just doesn't necessarily happen. But I think people are starting to wake up to that. And so are the regulators. And the regulators have criminal cases that they're working on against Tesla and Elon Musk for false. It was reported for, you know, wire fraud and deceptive advertising or, you know, other things that the average person would go to jail for. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Milton of Nikola fame, he showed a video of his truck driving, which was actually just rolling down a hill.
That was great.
Magically. And so, look, there's real risk there. I don't know if that's going to that as a person short Tesla, that would be a great day for me. It would be a real bad day for Tesla. But you also have Elon Musk's big 50 plus billion dollar compensation package that they're trying to get their shareholders to vote yes on again. But it was I've talked to some people that are lawyers and very knowledgeable about this. You really can't overturn a Delaware court. And even if your shareholders say he's due this amount, it's probably not going to happen. And, you know, $56 billion, I mean, you know, look, that's egregious. So you have a lot of institutional investors. I think Vanguard is the largest holder. They're voting against this. And for, you know, I think that
I think they'd be hard pressed to reverse this.
It's going to be impossible to reverse it because it's a Delaware court, and the Delaware court, Delaware has, you know, so many corporations and they have so many precedents in already that it would be essentially impossible to do this. But look, Elon Musk is going to do what he can. You know, that I think is going to be very difficult legally to get through, but who knows what'll happen.
Yeah.
Again, my main thesis is demand is slowing and will continue to slow because they have no new cars for, you know, several years. We really don't have anything new. You can slap new bumpers on a car. That's not a new car. And I think that,
yeah, you can say that about the iPhone too.
Well, listen, the iPhone, you have a lot of, I mean, if you go back 3 or 4 iPhones, you have a lot of improvement on those. They're not necessarily, the form hasn't necessarily changed much, but there's a lot of upgrades with cameras and memory and speed and things like that. But you know, you also, if you go back and you look at the Model S or the Model X, they're two highest priced vehicles. They've cut prices a ton. And those models still have basically the same chassis and everything from going back to probably the iPhone 6. Right. Right. So if you think of the iPhone 6 and you think of the iPhone 15, it's, you know, a lot of upgrades in Apple versus Tesla. So it's getting a little tired for Tesla. And I think it's a risk. And I don't see necessarily anything good happening. There's a lot of pumps. There's a lot of people that are just so cultish in this stock that they love it. They hope for it to work. They love Elon Musk, but he's also created a lot of people that don't necessarily like his political views. And by when you're running a company trying to sell a product, don't alienate people. I think that's sort of a thing to keep in mind.
Let's finish this up with a discussion of utilities for a minute. I've been looking at utilities as an idea and actually something that should be thought about for individuals as an alternative right now into a more defensive position due to the fact that if there in fact is going to be a rate cut, good for utilities, but more importantly, the power usage. And if you can find those utilities that have a good footprint in that area in terms of the data centers, right? The amount of energy and electricity required from these data centers is enormous. And there's definitely some plays there. Utility has been on a tear lately. What's your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I've been shorting utilities.
Really?
I just started shorting utilities. And I liked utilities a lot.
Well, they ran pretty hard here.
Yeah. And look, I think everybody, I mean, I said it's, I've never seen a market where you have utilities up 15% in a month. And that's exactly the amount, 15.6% XLU. They've been trading up and they've sort of jumped onto the AI, you know, data center usage bandwagon. I agree with you and I like utilities. I've been, you know, talking about utilities as a good long. I just think they're over. You don't necessarily need to chase them at these levels here. And they're defensive, but up 15%. Let's say if it goes down, you know, gets cut in half, and you buy a dip. That's kind of where I want to be. If that's how I would position right now in utilities. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for good long ideas, the one thing about utilities that I wish the government would do is upgrade our failing grid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're pouring tons of money into semiconductor fabs. Perhaps look at our backyard and upgrade our utility system, because it's not good. And I'm a big fan of nuclear energy. You know, everybody in the government, it's not my backyard type of thing, but that's another thing. If you, like I was saying, the iPhone 6 to iPhone 15, if you go back and you look at the 1970s version and the maybe early 80s version of a nuclear power plant, and today it's sort of like a rotary phone versus the iPhone 15. A lot different, a lot more technology, a lot safer.
Yeah, but if Jack Lemmon never did that movie, The China Syndrome, we'd be fine.
It was a great movie.
Great movie, but nobody could deal with this. Like Jaws, nobody wants to go in the water because there's sharks.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, Chernobyl was pretty scary, and that might have had more human error.
And Fukushima.
Fukushima, I mean, look, I lived in California for a long time, and people were always afraid of the San Onofre nuclear power plant, which is just south of L.A. and between L.A. and San Diego, having a problem. It never did, even with some, you know, relative earthquakes out there. You have more problems happening with and more carbon happening with some of the other types of power plants out there. So I think that this is something to examine. And again, you're going from a rotary phone to an iPhone 15 as far as the technology improvements. So it's hard to get through. They're super expensive to build, super hard to get past in a community. And really, to think long term, that's the way to go.
Yeah, I hear. Thomas Thornton, Hedge Fund Telemetry. How can people get more information aside from the fact that go to the show notes of episode number 8? What do we got? 869. Of the Disciplined Investor podcast over on disciplinedinvestor.com, and your information is there. But how else? Tell me.
Okay. I am at, you can find my website at hedgefundtelemetry.com. We will be offering free trials soon that you can sign up on the site. But if you really want info, you can just email me at info@hedgefundtelemetry.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Tommy Thornton, but I locked my account.
Uh-oh.
Because I've just found, yeah, I have, because I've just found too many spam accounts. So if someone, you know, follows me, they can DM me and say, oh, let Andrew in. He's right. Cool. Right. And I'll find you and gotcha. Let you in. But I'm tired of, you know, the spam.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say I had some incident that, someone said, you know, when am I getting my money back? And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, you said this to me on, you have a Discord, right? I'm like, no, I don't have a Discord. Somebody got scammed in money on something, and I felt bad. So I think there's just a lot of scammers out there.
There's a lot. Well, yeah. I appreciate your time this time and every time, buddy.
All right, Andrew.
Until next time. Thanks so much. See ya.
All right. Bye. See ya.
And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Lots of information that we covered here, all the way from self-driving to utilities and back to the idea of what's happening with the Fed and what's going on with the meme stock. So good information from Thomas Thornton, Tommy as we call him. And thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.